Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Thursday, January... No,
not yet.
Not December 29th, 2016. And this week, 2016 murdered some more famous and beloved people.
Yeah, we lost George Michael on Christmas Day, and the following day, Carrie Fisher, and the following day, her mother.
Yep.
And
but let's explain who's on the podcast first.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, it's me,
and
Travis.
Rachel.
And I'm Dana.
Yeah. And Dana's fighting a cold, but was kind enough to join us.
Yeah, I apologize in advance.
Regardless. So here we are, and 2016 is rapidly ending.
Mercifully almost over, and we are literally going outside, turning around three times, spitting and cursing every time we say anything in hopes that we don't tempt
lose
fate.
Anyone else.
Lose anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we just got news just before we started this, that John Waters is in the hospital, hopefully for something not serious.
It's just kidney stones.
Just be kidney
stones. I was in the hospital for that not a couple months ago.
So let's not have like some complications or something. So anyway.
Yeah, everyone just don't tempt fate.
We're just 2 days away from this year being over. And we're going to talk to you about the news of the day and the week and
come on, hang in, we can do it. we can make it another couple days without anybody else kicking
Don't
it prematurely,
say
right?
Like that.
Yeah, no, go outside, turn around three times and spit and curse.
All right, I'll do that on the way back.
Don't tempt the thing.
Okay. These things seem to work the opposite for me though. If I did what I was supposed to do, somebody would die.
Well, I don't know if you guys talked about this on the last podcast, but we are this year for New Year's Eve going out of our way to do all the things.
We talked extensively about what those things will be.
But gave detailed instructions as a matter of fact.
Okay. In fact, we will. And we're gonna do those things and we're gonna take video. I don't know that we'll ever post them, but okay, so Carrie Fisher. That's a big one.
That was rough.
That was like the big one.
Well, unexpected, because she had just filmed or was just going to film episode 8.
It was confirmed that she rapped.
She rapped, okay.
But she was on her book tour.
So it'll be one of those posthumous things with
like Tarkin.
Well, no CGI Princess Leia. I would walk out of the theater.
Yeah. I would also.
But I mean like Philip Seymour Hoffman in the
sure.
What's it called? Mockingjay, whatever movie.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I think he was still alive when they filmed Mockingjay, but then...
He had filmed like half his stuff and they had to reshoot kind of around.
I imagine we'll see some of that. As far as what I can tell, they haven't released any plans for that or any announcements.
Well, no. If she rapped, then they filmed everything with her they needed to, unless they needed to do reshoots or something.
They might need to do reshoots to... because they might have planned on her being in episode 9.
Right.
So they have to change the storyline?
So they might have changed the story a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well.
All right. Well, not just as Star Wars nerds. I don't want to talk about Star Wars as much as I want to talk about Carrie Fisher. And obviously, like, her pop culture role for women, I think, was extraordinary. Someone posted on Facebook, Princess Leia taught me that I could lead a rebellion, and Carrie Fisher taught me I didn't have to be perfect. And what that means, I think, for a lot of people is that she was a mental health warrior.
And
she talked openly and honestly about her life and her substance abuse problems and her depression and her bipolar disorder particularly. Yeah. And she did that, and it opened a lot of doors, I think, for a lot of people. And I think social media has expressed that more profoundly than I can, that, you know... the stigma doesn't need to be there, and the more openly we talk about it, the better it gets for those who suffer from those conditions. And I want to just kind of just give her some credit for that, because she's not just Princess Leia.
Absolutely. I don't think that there were a lot of people that I knew who are now touting, you know, what a activist she was in the field of mental health, or just being really open and honest about how Hollywood was run and what it's like to live in the shadows of really very famous parents.
Yes.
She was very candid about it. And for people who followed her, I think she was more than a gold bikini. But
yes. And I want to get to something that is... I came across, I was mourning her, and it was hard, like every thing this year has been. But I came across this kind of tweet storm that I'm going to read real quick about Star Wars and Princess Leia and Carrie Fisher. And here's what it says. It is by Anna Thierault, I'm going to say. Thierault. Here's what she says. Everyone is sharing pictures of Fisher when she was young, but let me show you the Leia that was the most important to me, General Organa, which is just a picture of her in The Force Awakens, right? Am I saying that right? Organa? Organa?
Organa.
Organa. Organa. She's not young, not wearing a gold bikini or a robe. She's dressed to do what she's been training to do her whole life, lead the rebellion. This is the Leia that has lost everything. Her world, her parents, her son to the dark side, her brother to who knows where, her lover. This is the Leia that could easily have broken down or given up. But she was stronger than literally every man in her life. She kept going. Because for Leia, fighting for what is right and just is more important than her feelings or her personal life. She is a fucking fighter. Unlike Luke or Han, Leia keeps fighting when things seem impossible. In spite of all the losses she's suffered, in spite of impossible odds. She's in it for the long haul. She is the real fucking hero in Star Wars. Without Leia, the rebellion would have quashed long ago. When I see Fisher as General Organa, I see a woman who has put up with so much shit from so many men, and yet keeps showing up for them. In General Organa, I see a woman changed by loss but not destroyed. I see a brilliant commander with good people skills and tactical knowledge. Princess Leia was great, but General Organa was Fisher's real gift to us. And she's who I'm going to be looking to in the dark times. May we all be able to get up every day and in spite of our pain and our loss and our fear, put our boots on and vest and plan to destroy the Empire.
Very well said.
Yeah.
Very well said.
I hadn't read that whole thing, just like the first couple, so that was kind of new to me.
Yeah. So...
Star Wars analogies for real life is always works for me. That always just gets me.
I know.
Me.
But, you know, Carrie Fisher gave us those things. Like,
and I completely agree. I mean, like, she's the strongest of the set. I mean, honestly.
She's the protagonist of the story, really.
Yeah.
If you take the story in full. She's the person who made the rebellion continue to go. Well, that's a good point, right? The men gave up.
Han gave up because the relationship went sour and just became a smuggler. Luke got emo and went to hide on an island.
Yeah.
And
he got emo a couple times to hide and go elsewhere.
Her son got super emo. And
the reason that she's General Organa is because she just kept fucking fighting and saying, this is the right thing to do and we're going to do it regardless of our own personal loss. Regardless of our feelings and regardless of how downtrodden we are, we will keep this fight up because it's the fight to be won.
Yeah.
And without her, it would never have been continued. Well, and so she is the hero.
So is that a segue to anything else?
Well, I was going to say, you know, right around the time that Carrie Fisher died, I started noticing a lot of think pieces show up around a lot of what I'd say, quote unquote, millennial blogs or blog space. Where people started talking about, like, 2016 isn't killing people, like, years of drug abuse have been killing people, or stop blaming this year is just a social construct, like, obviously there's nothing inherently dangerous about 2016. And there was one thing that came out, I believe came out today, I saw it today, and it was an article from The New Statesman called No More Heroes.
Yes.
And there were a couple of things that I wanted to make.
I sent this to you.
Yeah, you sent this to me. And, because there's been a lot of people bitching about, I guess, when the person of the day dies, you change your Facebook picture to that person, and then you care about it for a minute, and you have some...
Yeah, because all your friends are doing it.
Yeah, and you've got some fake grief because you felt some connection to maybe some of the work that this person did, but you don't actually know them. So
you don't have a right
You don't have a right to grieve. The families do, but you have a right to maybe be upset or have some sort of fear of missing out on whatever their next great work was going to be, but you don't have a right to grieve. Mm. And I thought that...
I thought that was bullshit, and I sent this around because I thought that that's not true. Go ahead.
And so the piece that I want to read from that says, it's okay to have feelings about the constant, horribly symbolic loss of people you never met and only half believed in anyway. It's okay to be angry that these people are just gone at a time when we felt like we needed them most.
Slow down.
And needed what they represented more. It's okay to have a sense of savage unfairness, salt rubbed into the wound, a vast, dreadful change in the human condition. No amount of smug rationalizing can make mourning easier or deaths less unfair. Bowie, Fisher, Ollie, Michael, Prince, Cohen, all of them died too young. Everyone dies too young. There are a few individuals for whom it could be said that they did not die too young. Many of these individuals are still living, and the fact to which the observation that there is little justice in the world is both cause and consequence. And give me 1 second to find where it picks up for what I wanted to say. Let the people mourn, please. Let them make gifts and badly Photoshop memes of resemblance, remembrance, and scatter them across the internet like earth on the grave of a kinder culture. Something bigger is passing away, and everyone can sense it. Not just Bowie and Cohen and Prince and George Michael and Muhammad Ali and Carrie Fisher, but the particular moment they inhabited. A freer time where the weird and queer and mad and poor could actually make the art that moved the world.
Yeah.
A time of excess and adventure and experimentation. And then it goes on to say, a lot of heroes died this year. We can only hope that a lot of heroes were also born. And I thought that piece was particularly good. So
it's particularly beautiful, and read the whole thing because it talks about the loss of culture of like the 70s, 80s, late 60s, 70s, 80s, and how there was the counterculture, and the counterculture became mainstream. And by doing so, it made a lot of people feel mainstream. And the loss that's felt isn't maybe felt as mainstream. And I ran into that directly today. I was talking to a coworker of mine about 2016, and I was just sort of said offhandedly how awful it was that we'd lost so many greats. And she said to me, and she's like a 46-year-old conservative Texan who's a lovely person, and she said, "What do you mean?" And then she immediately looked up who died in 2016 and read me the list of 58 people. And she didn't know who many of them were. Right. And it occurred to me that the loss that I think that we've experienced is not roundly felt in other parts of culture. That she
other,
didn't know
other
who,
circles didn't lose
every
single
thing that
they liked.
I had to explain to her who Prince was. She knew right. David Bowie, but
she didn't know who Prince was.
No,
even my dad knows who Prince was.
Yeah, she knew
I
who Alan Rickman was.
I recently had to explain to a coworker who Prince was as well. It was kind of depressing.
That's strange.
She loves Harry Potter, and so when Alan Rickman came up, I said, "Oh, he was Snape," and she was like, "Oh, that's sad," as though like as a passing thought. Like, so it was a very awakening moment for me of like this, that article plus that experience, sort of galvanized or I don't know this feeling of like. This has been a year that's been particularly painful for those of us who have that idolization and or like reverence for those people who were weird and out there and different, or, you know, just music gods. Like, my dad doesn't love Prince, but my dad was really sad when Prince died because my dad has a reverence for his musical ability.
Well, and he gets why we were so upset.
Yeah.
Like, David Bowie's not his favorite artist either, but...
But he gets David Bowie, at least. He understands the cultural reference and the impact of David Bowie. So explaining
to... He was probably
to,
more upset about Hans Gruber than he was about Snape.
I don't think he was upset about any of it, to be honest. I think he was like, yeah, people die. He lived through an era where, like, all of his musical heroes died within a couple of years.
He lost Jimmy and Janis.
Jimmy,
and
Janis, John Bonham. Like, he lost Jim all Morrison, of them within a couple of years that he was like, you bitches don't have anything to complain about. Like... I lost everybody in their prime. So,
Bob
I get
Marley,
that.
Brian Jones.
Yeah.
On and on and on and on.
And John Bonham is his personal hero.
Yeah.
Like,
sure. He didn't, and my dad will always be quick to tell you, he didn't even choke on his own vomit. He died in a plane crash.
What's that?
John Bonham.
Yeah.
Didn't he die in a plane crash?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
No, he died in a car accident.
Or did he?
No, John Bottom died of a drug overdose, alcohol overdose. Right?
Yeah. Alcohol poisoning.
Okay, so there's one of them. There's
Ronnie
one,
Van Zant of Lynyrd Skynyrd died in a plane crash.
That's what it was. So there's one of them that he exalts as like, and he didn't even die of his own making, right?
No, yeah.
Because the rest of them that he can tell me about when I'm a kid, all of them died.
And Stevie Ray Vaughan kicked a horrible drug and alcohol habit to die in a helicopter crash.
That's who it was, Stevie Ray Vaughan, which is his favorite guitar player of all time. Anyway, it was telling to me that you can't just say 2016 was the worst thing ever because all these people died and everyone knows what that means. Because, in fact, they don't. Right. It is a particular kind of subculture of people that were affected by this year in a way that other people weren't, and I didn't realize that. So that was
well. I just one of the things that really touched me about this article, which is a part that I kind of glossed over because I want you all to go read it, is really the idea that for a certain group of us, we really just lost a lot of people that we really kind of need right now.
Yes.
We're moving into a place where culture's moving away from what we were all striving towards and to
thought
lose them
we were
at
making
like
gains
and
toward.
Thought we were making gains toward mm-hmm. and to lose them all at this particular point in time is kind of
additionally painful
because now is when we need them most.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Who are the voices in culture that we need to hear, listen to? I mean, just stepping aside out of politics for a moment, because I don't even know where we'd start with that.
I don't know.
But
I don't know.
Where is the counterculture?
Well, that's the problem.
Is there a counterculture?
That's the whole point of this article. Is like there is really isn't one anymore. We have a celebrity culture, but the counterculture is
the Kardashians.
Pretty muted.
They're not. They're not counterculture.
No, they're the mainstream.
Making a tongue-in-cheek point.
Where is it is a good question. I don't know.
Where is it? What is it? Just weird Twitter? Is that our counterculture?
I don't know.
I certainly hope it doesn't stop there.
One would hope, right?
I mean, where are our great artists? Where's my David Bowie? Where's my Prince?
I mean, we've got Kanye. Oh. I mean, we're gonna go like superstars. Who do we have?
We don't want to
Gwen
talk
Stefani.
About superstars.
Gwen Stefani.
We want to talk about where's the counterculture? Where are people who are coming out of nowhere, which is what these people did, and are going to make that kind of cultural impact? And I think the answer is that's not going to happen.
No, everything's been completely and utterly trash washed.
Processed and homogenized and market tested.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you can be a star if you go on a reality show and four people that no one cares about says that you're good.
Well, I can tell you that just from being in the music business, sitting in the room with A&R representatives, and they just said, well, we want to make you sound like this thing, exactly like this thing that we already know has sold X amount of records.
Yeah. Right.
So
where
we expect to make exactly
track?
22 grand off of this
and,
record.
And,
so.
And it's very tempting for you to say, okay, because I want to play on a stage and do a tour and make money doing this.
Yeah.
To go down that route, and that's what most artists do, even if they're not even aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, so, I think like the closest thing we've got probably that comes to mind from like a prominent culture perspective is something like Adam Levine, who tries to kind of try to keep it a little emo here.
Adam
on the
Levine has a line of
but like,
jeans
that,
that's
at where, Kmart. That's where I'm going. Like the thing is, that's there is that's the market that they're selling to. Like
right, what I'm asking is this:
we don't have David Bowie anymore. We've got Hot
Topic. The 60s and the 70s were a revolt against the 50s, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
the 50s entirely. Were. That was what came out of the 50s, and that like mass consumer and like homogenous culture became the 60s with the Beatles, and then the 70s with like all of the great rock music and all the things.
Yes,
the 80s produced another era of consumerism, which produced grunge music, which was a counterculture. It did two things if you're into like metal and whatever, like butt metal.
The punk.
It did that. Yeah. It also did punk and it also did grunge. And it said, we are a counterculture to your movement of this. And the 90s too, right?
That Reaganism and
Reaganism.
Right. Consumerism.
Consumerism. Yeah. And as a reaction to all of that. So I don't think we've had one since then. And the 90s seems like yesterday, but you have to remember That was a really long time ago now.
Yes.
The 90s was 20 years ago now.
Well, and you, I want to say, like, even though this is just a two data point set, just think about the difference between Woodstock and Woodstock 96. Or, I'm sorry, 94.
Oh, well, but even as a kid, I could see the difference. There was obviously a heavily corporatized...
Yeah.
You know,
taking advantage of nostalgia to a
certain
degree.
That's unfair. I think that Woodstock came out of an anti-war agenda because of Vietnam.
Yes.
I think the second Woodstock came out of a commercial perspective, but I don't think that the music that came out as a rejection of, as a counterculture movement in the 80s and 90s particularly, was a result of that. I don't think like Nirvana was like, oh, I'm going to capitalize off of the sentimentalism of Woodstock.
Certainly not. Quite the opposite, in fact.
Right.
But that's the exception, not the norm, now that we go, like you said, the 90s were an awful long time ago.
But there was a movement, at least, against the 80s consumerism culture and Reagan culture that produced that music. We haven't had that, and it's been 20 years, so are we due? Or are we past this notion that art makes a difference?
I think that you're right in the way that, like, in... If we're talking strictly music, I would say music that's not widely listened to or often popularized, I think it's entirely possible that there are several bands in like the metal culture that go out of their way to say, like, no, we'll never sign to a major label, like, we don't want your money, that kind of thing. But
that's not what I'm talking about.
No, I'm just saying, like, I don't want to play what my corporate overlords tell me to play.
I'm talking about the difference between, like, I'm talking about, like, the Beatles and then Nirvana and then what is now, like, maybe Amanda fucking Palmer. I don't know. She's
Amanda
the only
Palmer.
Light of hope that I have.
Amanda
for
Palmer
a revolution.
Got in hot water today on Twitter.
Really?
Uh-oh, what happened?
She had a quote that was supposed to be sort of a tongue-in-cheek joke, and it was taken
what was
totally out of context.
Do you know
this
what it
is
was?
Important.
I don't remember right now. You're going to have to look it up.
Yeah,
I'm surprised you guys didn't hear about it.
I didn't hear about anything today.
Yeah, I didn't really Twitter today. But I'd say like a surprise one, although it did come out of corporate culture. But
well, actually,
really
no, it's interesting. Now I remember what she said. What she said, literally, it ties into exactly what we're talking about. She had said something to the effect of, at the very least, Donald Trump is going to inspire a whole wave of punk or counterculture media or art. And a lot of people took that as you're saying it's a good thing that Trump is president or something
She's right.
But no, that's funny.
Right.
That's exactly what she said.
I'm on record. I think on this
now,
podcast of saying I'm really, really,
now,
really
I
waiting
literally,
for the next Ministry record because they always make the
Ministry
best
has come
albums.
Out, by the way, and said out loud, and they're men, so they get to say this and not get fucking shit. They say out loud, we make the best music under the worst Republicans.
Well, like, nobody under 30 knows who Ministry is, unfortunately.
No.
God, you guys.
Well, it's true. I mean, you want to take me up on that bet? Anyway,
some sort of online poll?
During the break, look up the Amanda Palmer thing, because I literally glanced at it for 2 seconds at work. I didn't have time to dig into it, but it was something to that effect. And let's just make sure I didn't get it horribly wrong.
Yeah,
believe that Amanda Palmer would be the type of person to come up with something along that type of sentiment, because
that's,
I think it is true.
We all agree. Like, that is when...
Well, that's what we've been talking about here for the whole first segment.
Yeah. I mean, that is what happens. So that... Yeah. And I think... The reason I brought her up specifically was that she has made her own revolution around how music gets paid for and how art gets paid for and how you step outside the corporate culture of art and music and you allow the people who love you and who want to hear more of you pay a little bit. And she got a lot of shit because she did this back in the day when I think it was just GoFundMe, right? And she asked for like $125,000.
In her particular case, it was a Kickstarter. But.
Kickstarter, I'm sorry, you're right. That was the original Kickstarter. She asked for like $125,000 and she got like a couple $1 million. And the internet beat her up really bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
But she made more money with the same number of fans that she always had as like people who go with labels make with way, way more fans.
Sure, but how did she get all those fans in the first place?
Because she's tremendous. And she reached out to those people, and she's been reaching out to them for years. And you should mm-hmm. seriously read The Art of Asking because it explains it. But I think that she may be the new revolution in the music industry and art world of like crowdsourcing and talking to the people who speak to you and who you speak to, and relying on that method of distribution, I guess.
Sure.
To get music out and get music out that doesn't have to be approved by labels or corporations or anyone else, and that no one profits from other than the people who made the art in the first place. Yeah. And that's, to me, the new revolution. Well,
I was
going
to say, what's revolutionary for me about what she did there was she took advantage of what institutions are new that she could leverage to do something different than what the corporate overlords,
yes.
like what the old masters were telling her,
yeah.
you must do it this particular way. And she was revolutionary in saying, like, no, I do not have to do it that way.
And I'm not going to change my art for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah. I think, you know, it's not like she built Kickstarter, but she certainly did a lot to show what it can be done to show the old institutions that we don't need you to do it the way you did it in 1965
and
anymore.
by her sort of leading by example, people like Radiohead said, we're just gonna put our new album out for
pay us what you want,
and they made a shitload of money from that.
Yeah, I paid my $10.
I did too.
Yeah,
I also paid Amanda Palmer my $10 every time because I admire that and I know it's going directly to her. And so
my
hopeful part is like, maybe the new revolution of music won't be a new style.
Well,
it'll be a new level.
Let's shift from music real quick. And how can we apply this to a political movement or political movements? Because that's really where we need to go.
Yes.
Going forward.
You know, I think that that's been happening behind the scenes in a way that a lot of us don't really get a lot of visibility to. I think particularly via the internet and the blogging press and uh-huh. the way in which a quote-unquote grassroots movement
gets...
Well, and podcasts, and they certainly don't hurt...
Yeah, I'm not talking in third person anymore.
I'm talking about, like, we don't get paid for this.
Not yet.
But, like, if we got paid per click, do you think that we'd go a little more shock jock, a little more, like, headline-y, like, you won't believe what we're going to say today?
No, because then we get sick of it.
That's the way... Well, and we'd quit, because personally we wouldn't like that. But that's how bloggers get paid, is per click.
And who doesn't want to get paid?
Well, that's a rabbit hole that leads you to a whole new fake news industry.
It does. Right, it does. Exactly.
And, yeah, I've actually been listening to this book called Trust Me, I'm Lying,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't really have a lot of information in it that you wouldn't necessarily have already known intuitively or probably known intimately
uh-huh.
about the way in which the modern media operates, but it is full of amazing anecdotes. Mm-hmm. About,
and written,
like,
by a guy who did this
professionally. Who perpetrated
the monster we live with now.
Yeah.
Well, I think modern news media is fucked.
No, yes. Completely.
Yes.
I mean, if we didn't think so before the election, now we know completely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And, you know, we can't even balance the worthlessness of what's left of the mainstream media against the fake news revolution, where people were like, we've taken 10 leaps in towards the idiocracy to where
people have just decided what
news is whatever it is I want to hear.
Yes. Yeah.
There doesn't have to be any basis for fact check or reality or anything. It's just, I literally want to hear and click on only what I want to hear. And that is news and that is truth, period.
Well, it's post-truth society,
yeah. Which is the first step towards fascism.
Yes.
And that is not being
hyperbolic.
That's literally what happens. That's what propaganda is. Propaganda is exactly that. We call it fake news. We should stop calling it that. We should start calling it propaganda.
Well, and I think in 2016 we experienced like this wave of fake news that has made the real news and said, like, you know, what did this do to possibly influence the election? Not to continuously talk about this book, but what he talks about a lot is the responsibility of the blogging culture just doesn't really exist. The requirement to make a retraction or an editorial note that says, like, we left
New York Times doesn't even do that.
No, they don't even do that anymore.
Or source things?
Source things. They're not required to do that. So it's clickbait headline that mm-hmm. says, take a quote out of context that will frame your point of view the way that you
pizzeria
want it to be seen.
Sex child ring.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And you can say literally anything you want in the headline, and then in the body of it, not be guilty.
Well,
of libel.
I think this, like, year was almost an experiment. Like,
yes,
what will these people actually believe and pass off as news?
Yeah.
And spread. And at first I kind of thought it was a dumb inside joke. Like we'll do sometimes, like I'll come across a dumb headline that says, you know, Trump dresses in clown makeup and fucks avocados.
Right.
And I'll send it to you and we'll post it on Facebook and we'll just laugh at it.
Yeah.
But like these people are spreading that shit around.
Like it's truth.
Like in earnest. Or it seems to be that
way. So like I can talk.
No, it
like,
is.
Even I consider myself a smart person and I've been thinking about this stuff a lot. And even I got fooled about one the other day. That was
it creeped in, but but it's not as profitable on
what
our
was
side.
The one that
okay,
was
so
yours?
I got one. I told you about it today. The headline was Trump considering inauguration plans in Trump Tower. Now, what that meant was he's in Trump Tower
considering
his inauguration.
Not that he wants
plans.
To have the inauguration in Trump Tower. Which he would if he could, probably.
When I read that, I was like, is that presidented in any way? No, presidented. Is that presidented in any way?
Precedented.
Did you see his?
I do.
Okay.
I see
yeah. No. Is that precedented in any way?
Yeah.
Did it not be held in D.C. or anything like that? And then I went back sourcing stuff for today and was like, I want to read that article and read through it and like really read the whole thing and was like, oh no, he's in Trump Tower planning his inauguration plans. Not he's planning his inauguration plans in Trump Tower.
But here's the
thing. Trump Tower. And you got kept by
well,
that.
Here's two problems. Anytime there's a ridiculous headline about Trump, it's plausible.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's and,
you stop
that's why I don't feel so guilty.
And number two, the other problem is they floated the whole fake news thing on liberal sides. And some of it got clicks and some of it got spread, but not like on the other side.
Yeah.
There's just not an audience for it because too many of us call bullshit.
Well, we look it up, we go, that seems too much. Like, I'll read something that some Republican supposedly said that I hate. Like, Lindsey Graham said this.
Said we're going to bomb China tomorrow.
But that's the part where it gets you, right? Because I know a lot about Lindsey Graham. Whoever wrote this article just knows he's a hated man on the right.
Yeah.
So they'll say, like, Lindsey Graham said that we should burn dog babies who want to have abortions because women are awful. And you're like, all right. No. Like, it's of course, it's more subtle than that. It's like, you know, Trey Gowdy said that all emails of all humans should be monitored by him personally and his staff in case they have anything to do with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And that shit gets shared on my Facebook like four times. And you're like, guys, that's
obviously not true.
If that were true. And so you just Google. Mm-hmm. What you do is you just read that and you go, okay, I don't
it's not sourced. It's not true. It's
and you Google
silly.
It and you go, Trey Gowdy everyone's emails or whatever.
Yeah, but that's what we do.
And then nothing comes up except fake news sites. And then you go Trey Gowdy news and like no one's doing it. And then you go just Trey Gowdy and it's like, the email scandal gate from 6 months ago. And you're like, oh, okay, this is clearly not true. And then you go back to the article and you read through like there's no sources at all, which is to your point, Dana, there's no need to be. And then you go, why are four really smart people that I know sharing this?
Well, I mean, it's honestly like two steps away from having at the end of each article say like share 9 times in 9 minutes or else Trey Gowdy gets to go through all your
emails.
You're
going to have a flat tire and your bank account's going to be drained and your kid's going to be
dead. It's the same thing.
It's a chain. Yeah. It's a chain letter.
Except people would get pissed off at the chain emails 20 years ago and say how stupid it is.
But they didn't at first.
Well,
at first,
a lot of people thought it was cute. I remember like MySpace days, that stuff went around everywhere. And I basically bowed out from anyone who sent me one. I was like, never
I completely
do that to
unfollowed.
Me ever again.
Can I tell you a story about this?
Sure.
Sure.
I was 9 years old and I got this chain letter and it said like, if you don't
like snail mail, real letter.
Yes.
Yeah,
XYZ,
I got one.
In the next whatever day. And it was like, put a dollar in an envelope and send it to this person and whatever. Yeah. If you don't do that, something really bad's going to happen. And I was like, this seems like bullshit. And I was like 9 or 10.
Yeah, I was about the same age and I brought it to my dad. I was like, what is this?
Oh, I didn't do that. Okay. I felt really bad because I didn't have a dollar and I didn't know who it was from. And I felt like maybe it was something I did. So I didn't do anything. And my parents and I were getting ready to go on a road trip the next day to my parents to drop us off to my grandparents in Oregon. And on our way, to Oregon, my dad got a flat tire. And it was very upsetting for my parents because they didn't have a lot of money and the flat tire was going to cost a lot. And I went to my mom and I was crying. And I said to her, this is my fault. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I got this letter the other day. And I didn't know what it was. And I told her the story and she was like, oh my God. No. Like, holy, like I could just see in her face, like, I want to burn the world down. I don't know how to properly explain to you how not your fault this is and how much I want to murder the person that made you think that. But then she explained to me like weird chain mail and how it works and how it's supposed to make you pay people and they're bad people and all those things. And like
that made sense.
That like that moment.
Did that ever work?
In my life is like.
I was just thinking, I wonder if anybody's made a significant sum of money off of something like that. Yes, they have.
But that moment in my life. Of like feeling like I was responsible for my dad's flat tire because of some chainmail, I think is what has made me so averse to like being predatory advertising, any kind of predatory advertising, any kind of scam.
Yeah,
I'm literally suspicious of fucking everything, even things that are very legit. I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, my parents are very vigilant about that too.
I don't know.
Also, just as an aside, if you want to have good luck in 2017, send $1 care of Irreverent Testimony.
Yeah, send a dollar bill in a fucking envelope. No mail. Because we all use
email address.
Because we all use cash too, right?
Yeah.
No, you were gonna say that actually did work, like in the 40s or something.
No, it absolutely did. There was a time in which people still used snail mail, as we say. And it's like a version of a pyramid scheme.
Well, are we right? are we cycling back to a time when everybody is super gullible? Like I'm thinking of the War of the Correct. Worlds, which is one of my favorite stories of all time when Orson Welles and his, I think it was Mercury Theater Company did the, New Year's Eve. Was it Halloween? Was it New Year's Eve or Halloween?
I thought it was Christmas, but
I thought it was New Year's Eve.
I think it was New Year's Eve, 1939, I want to say.
Yeah.
Did the War of the Worlds broadcast and not everybody, but enough people, millions of Americans,
Were freaked the fuck thought out.
That Martians were actually invading and vaporizing people.
It was a radio show and people thought it was a news hour.
Yes.
They were like, oh my God, did you hear? And people like mass freaked out.
Yeah, because the radio show had like correspondents in the field and it made it sound like a real radio show.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they made it sound like
we're going. No, God, you're so fucking right. We're going back to War of the Worlds.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Except it wasn't intentional for Orson Welles, but now.
No, he didn't want mass panic. No, he just wanted to entertain people.
A fun story, and he did a really good job, so much that people freaked out.
Oh, yeah, he had to go before Congress.
We are now in a time where they're like, can we War of the Worlds? It again and just make people believe whatever we want them to believe. Yeah, I think we can.
So I think we're doing
My question is more about gullibility of the American people at large.
I think we're doing one of two things. That is one of them. The other is one of my favorite anecdotes, which is essentially the opposite of that anecdote, was there were a bunch of people back when there were paper boys who would stand on the street and be like, extra, extra, read all about it, that were telling such sensational yellow journalism stories around the time that World War II was about to start.
But the kids were telling the stories, or that was in the headlines?
No, it was in the headlines, but the headlines were like, war to start today.
Yeah.
And then you'd read it, and it would be like, maybe, we might stay out of it. Probably not.
That never changes. So you've got to sell papers.
No, but in that era, there were several people who were, and I'd like to pull up some specific names, and maybe I will over the break, but there were several prominent people who were involved in the war effort who walked past those paper boys who were like, the war has started, they bombed Pearl Harbor, and they were like, shut up, kid. Like, you've been telling me lies every day.
So the boy who cried wolf is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was the boy who cried wolf. So when somebody actually put out a headline that's like, the war is on, they were like, bullshit.
They actually bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Well, remember, no CNN in those days.
No, yeah, exactly.
No way for them to corroborate. It's just boy on the corner saying, like, no, the war is on.
It's 1 hour of nightly news on the radio and or television and a newspaper. That's how you get your news.
Yeah, and I can see how you can get both cultures. I think I can see how you can get War of the Worlds where people tune in and go, like, you know, mass panic over something that is not a real news story.
That's what
or
we have
people
now.
Who ignore real news stories because they're
That's
so
what we
tired.
Have now too.
Yeah, it's what I'm saying.
Oh, God damn it.
We get both. Yay!
Oh my God, I hate to.
I think there's too much media to pull off a War of the Worlds again. There was a great Radiolab episode where they talked about how they did it, and then in the 60s or 50s they did it again in Ecuador, and it worked way too well. And
really,
yeah. And then they did it again in the late 60s in Chicago, and it didn't really work. People finally rose up. But it was like, I mean, I think work is an interesting term. Like, people really panicked and thought that.
I mean, can you really blame them?
But
that
didn't
much
people if... really panic and thought that Hillary Clinton murdered people and that she like leaked state secrets?
I think they wanted to believe that. I think they hated her so much that they will circulate a story because it backs up their point of view. Now, then, did they apply any critical thinking to it? I don't know.
But didn't,
I
mean, like, but there was a certain segment of the population who believed it were the world style. Like, oh my God.
Oh yeah, no, like the guy who showed up to the pizza place in DC to look for the child sex ring.
So it is both things. It is war of the worlds. Like, it is people going, this is real and it's serious and we have to do something. And it's also... the real news stories got so lost in that bullshit that people were like, Russia hacked us, lol. And you're like, no, actually, happened. So your reverse stay on this one. Like, well, the thing you should care about is the thing that you don't care about. And the thing that you shouldn't care about that's not real is the thing you're freaking out about. And it's just... I don't.
Yeah.
Well, I know. And
I'm not completely guilt-free of this, although this was more of me chuckling it than feeling like it's absolutely true. But I saw a cartoon today that I just totally chuckled at, which was a family in a nuclear fallout shelter, and the mother's leaning over to the father going, yeah, but those emails.
Oh, no, yeah, I've retweeted a bunch of those. But here's an important point.
I thought that was genuinely funny, but like, I don't know that I necessarily believe that we're really going to start nuclear war, although my favorite
Christmas hopefully not, because I don't think Putin really wants to get nuked any more than we do. But
I certainly hope that's the case.
But he does bring an unstabilizing force, and I'll get into all that at a later time. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. Yeah. But here's the thing, that the point I kind of wanted to make. Like, yes, there were a few times during the cycle I was fooled. Like, somebody sent me a story or a text, or I saw something on Twitter and it was about Trump saying something ridiculous or Ted Cruz fucking a jar of mayonnaise or something.
Right.
Well.
But he did do that.
Unverified. But
psychologically, yes.
But yeah, anyway, so I would retweet it or put something on Facebook. And then when I found out it was bullshit, I'd feel bad about it. And I'd try to retract it. I'd be like, take it down.
Yeah.
But your Uncle Steve, who retweets that Hillary Clinton has a child sex ring and murdered the NSA guy or whatever.
Yeah.
They're not going to feel the same compulsion.
No.
They don't even care when it gets disproven. That's just the media lying to them. They knew the truth when it came out.
Right.
Or even if...
Well, that's the greatest thing about it is once it gets started, like once it gets a headline, it never goes away.
You can't unring the bell.
Not for conservatives.
The only thing that's ever going to happen...
For liberals, at least we go like, shit, sorry guys, that was wrong. And like, I've had people that I respect immensely on my like social media pages be like, not take it down, but be like, this is actually bullshit and I'm so sorry I didn't source it first.
Yeah.
And they admit to it, which I love.
Not all liberals do that, mind you.
No, not all of them.
But
Rachel Maddow does a great job of her retractions. But the thing that I think...
Typically, I haven't watched her
when we see a lot of
now.
A lot of blog things, even when it goes up to HuffPost level or Breitbart level or anything, the headline the first time is, this guy went out of his way to fuck children. And then the second headline, once it's disproven, is this guy denies fucking those children.
Right.
And they don't say...
They know how to work the propaganda machine.
Yeah, they don't say they it's so been disproven or like, we just totally lied our ass.
Well,
up.
The New York...
All they say is just, now he's denying.
He's denying that ever happened.
New York Times, WAPO, and USA are just as bad because when Trump says something ridiculous, like, you know, 8 million illegal immigrants voted for Hillary Clinton... They'll just say Trump claims.
Trump
they don't
claims.
Like Trump claims.
Trump
but there's
lied
nothing,
about XYZ.
But there's nothing to support it or without. Right. They just say Trump claims. So it gives it an air of legitimacy.
Right.
And they do this
totally
over, and,
they,
over
yes.
and over
do.
And over.
And, I think
and they're going to do it throughout his whole presidency.
Yes. No, because they need to legitimize him because they don't know how to cover a despot.
Yeah. Well, what's his name? The guy who runs CNN, Jeff Brandt, or am I getting that totally wrong?
Jeff Brandt is your boss.
Hi, Jeff. Bezos? No, that's the other guy. Who's the guy who runs
Zucker.
CNN?
Zucker.
Yeah, Jeff Zucker gave an interview, and I think we might have talked about this already, where he's saying that he was really, really sorry that they ran a lot of his interviews in their entirety because he or his
Bullshit. They're personal friends.
He's full of shit. We talked about this though.
I want to say one thing that he did do to try to counteract that was in the lower third graphics.
Was hire Corey Lewandowski?
Well, no.
Keep Jeffrey Lord on payroll?
I don't think that helped either. But what they did start doing is in the lower third graphics was when they'd say,
oh, the cryon?
Yeah, like Trump denies saying that Japan should have nukes.
But he did.
In parentheses, he did.
Yeah, but like, in the end, none of that made a difference.
That should be the headline, and you putting it in the footnotes doesn't make you not culpable.
True, right. But it's something.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't make you not culpable. If you know that what he's saying is bullshit, that's the headline, not...
No, I mean, the headline
Trump says blah.
Retracts statement or something.
We may get there. It may get so ridiculous that the headlines are just going to be Trump said this bullshit and...
Trump lied his ass off today.
I really believe that the news does... The mainstream news, the MSM... does not know how to cover someone like him.
Well, it's going to become so adversarial that they may not have a choice.
Well,
okay, but just for a minute, it's troublesome to me sometimes how the media covers the media and how the media covers everything else.
Oh, sure.
Because the media covers the media in this very precious way.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Like,
there was a
journalist that was killed, and we're going to give 30 minutes of coverage to that.
And that's
now,
fine.
30,000 Pakistanis were killed in the meantime, like at the same time that journalist was killed, and we don't even talk about that.
Mm-hmm. No, one U.S. journalist was killed in a melee of 30,000 people. And
we're going to give 30 minutes of media coverage to the media, the journalist.
Now, I understand the instinct to do that.
I get that. It's your fucking friend.
Yeah.
And also, journalism is sacred. And we should protect journalists. And we should not allow them to be jailed or murdered or anything else. Because I believe in the First Amendment. At the same time, media is also really precious about itself in a different way. Which is like, what are they going to cover their own failures? Like...
I think some of them do really well, but not frequently.
So it fails
not at the highest level.
No, I agree.
Yeah, if you happen to read Mother Jones or Daily Kos, sure.
Yeah.
But NBC is not going to run a special on how NBC
fucked
up the balance of their coverage or had misleading headlines or whatever the hell else.
Right. And so we are counting on journalism to report to us what happened, but we are also dealing with a media that...
refused to talk about itself.
And refused to talk about important things, and that played a large part in the election of this man that they despise, and they're never going to cover that. So I was listening to this Noam Chomsky brief, like, 2-minute interview today about, like, how shitty the media is. And it just occurred to me, like, man, they just, like... His point was, like, in defense of them, like, yes, they're the fucking worst and they failed to cover any issue. That was his point, was like, literally on November 8th, two really important things happened. And one was the American election. And the other one was like this world climate summit where all the major like global climate scientists came together and said that we're in a major crisis.
Yeah.
And no major news outlet covered it.
No, of course not.
And so like his argument was like, they didn't cover issues. They covered scandals.
Right.
They didn't cover issues.
And events.
Not even, a little bit events, but mostly like scoops.
Right.
Right?
It's all about scoops.
And when I was listening to him talk, I was like, and the other thing is like, the big scoop of this election cycle is how badly the media covered it. And we're never going to hear that because the media is never going to cover their own fucking failure.
On that note, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Talk about some more stuff. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We kind of waxed philosophical about a whole bunch of random crap in the first half and kind of wound down the end of the year. This is our last podcast of 2016.
It is.
So now we're going to talk about some politics and current events. And there is a kerfuffle with Russia in the last couple days.
Yes.
Apparently some of our diplomats and ambassadors are getting harassed over in Russia the last few days or something to that effect. Yes. And
Barack Obama, my president,
for another couple weeks,
he's still my president, did a kind of amazing thing today, which is a little bit unprecedented or unprecedented,
as Trump would say.
And the State Department and the intelligence agencies and his administration came out with a very public and very scathing set of stuff about Russia, let's say, because it was sanctions and it was also kicking out of ambassadors. There was a lot of stuff that Obama did today, which was very like badass. I'm still the president for 3 weeks and I'm going to fucking do some shit, and it was like heartwarming for me.
But it was very like.
Do you have Dana a
new Hollywood presidential?
The thing that that he did.
Wait. Before you get to that, though, I do want to bring up that as soon as I heard about this, the initial reaction by Republicans in Congress was like, "Whoa, he's overstepping his bounds. He's not." So it was cover, or just the typical knee jerk. Oh, Obama did it because it's bad. Kind
of. That's exactly right. There was a typical knee-jerk reaction from the congressional Republicans that said, like, whoa, you only have 3 weeks left in office. You can't be doing something this big.
My reaction is, he's still the president, so fuck you. But go ahead. What did he do?
Oh, so, sorry, now I have to back up. The executive order that he issued today provided authority for the response and oversight of international cybersecurity activity that interfered to undermine our election process and institutions and those of our allies or partners. He sanctioned 9 entities and individuals, which included 2 Russian intelligence services, 4 individual officers, and 3 companies that provided materials to those cyber operations. And in the end, he ended up kicking out 35 Russian quote-unquote diplomats, and then bringing everyone who is a U.S. ambassador or working in the U.S. embassy in Russia and brought them back to the United States.
So let me just break that down for you, if I can. And I don't know if I can do this right, but essentially Russia hacked our election cycle, and the White House knew about it in April in terms of the hacking of the DNC. They didn't talk about it until May. They knew that the Russians had hacked the election before the election, but wanting to appear nonpartisan because we were all sure it was going to go our way, they didn't say anything. And post-election and post-Barack Obama's hangover from realizing that his legacy has been destroyed by this orange Cheeto Caesar, he got real mad and said, we're going to impose sanctions against Russia for the cyber terrorism that they committed during our election cycle in order to deter other countries from doing so. What that meant was Russia has people in the United States that are their ambassadors and they're like, you know, sort of liaisons, let's say, to Russia and the United States. And we have the same in every country, really, that we have relations with. And Obama kicked 35 of them out, literally said, you're not allowed in our country.
You have 72 hours to get out.
Was it 48 or 72 to get out of the country?
Of our country. You're not allowed here anymore. And then specifically and publicly, this is the important thing, publicly kind of called out these 3 different companies and 2 different security agencies, I think it was, and said, like, that these people specifically had a role in the hacking of our elections.
We have sufficient evidence to believe that they did, and then we need to get them out now.
Yeah, and we're going to, first of all, eject them from our country. Second of all, impose sanctions on those companies if they do business in the U.S. And also, in the future, in the next coming 3 weeks, release evidence that supports these sanctions. So then Joe Biden... because he's our gaffe master and also, like, the perfect leak machine, it was like, oh, there's more that we're not putting out publicly. There's so much more you guys don't even know.
I mean,
and everyone was like, there's more. And then the administration was like, there are things that we are going to do that are non-public that will be obvious to Russia, but that are a national security risk that we're not going to release.
Yeah.
And then they did this in a very deliberate act of, first of all, trying to deter other countries from trying to hack our elections. And second of all, to shame Russia publicly in front of the international community by saying, these are not people that you can trust. Here's XYZ and here's the evidence of what they did.
Right.
And third, from a political angle, I think, from Barack Obama being the greatest troll of all time, and not in a trolly way, but just like the greatest, like, get under their skin and fuck with Republicans troll ever, did this because what it does, and we're going to have a conversation about this in a second, is box Trump in, puts Trump in this place where there's an executive order that he can absolutely rescind. First day in office, he can say, there's no Republic or there's no Russian sanctions, right?
But that puts him in Putin's pocket.
But what it says to the American people is, on his first day in office, Mr. I don't know Putin and I'm not his puppet, I'm disagreeing with my own intelligence agencies. My intelligence agencies are wrong, and I'm gonna rescind that order because I'm not in the pocket of Putin. But what again?
Rage.
This isn't just my opinion.
No, I actually completely agree.
Like this puts him in a funny spot.
He's got one of two choices. One is say Russia's our ally and I'm going to rescind these sanctions, or the other is to say, like, no, there has to be a consequence for what they've done, and these sanctions need to be in place.
Are you guys forgetting?
But he's going against not only congressional Republicans who have said there needs to be an investigation into hacking of our elections, because that's fucked up. A lot. Well,
I actually have these
quotes pulled up. And secondarily, he's saying at this point, when he's the president now, these are his intelligence agencies. And he's saying, my intelligence agencies are not my ally as much as Putin is, even though I said I barely know the guy and he definitely didn't do anything wrong. Now, he can do that. He's Trump. He can do anything he wants.
He will do it.
But I think that people like my dad and people that grew up in the Cold War and they duck and hid.
Nope.
They believe it's over?
They helped them win.
No. Well, are going to
help
be like,
to win because
it's hold on. Hold on. Are going to say, wait a minute. Like, everyone says we need an investigation and we should definitely not let them do that. And you said you weren't friends with him, but he helped you win. And now you're going to go against the CIA and the FBI. This is law enforcement who they fetishize. And you're going to say that those people are wrong because you'd rather be Putin's puppet to Clinton's literal comment at one of the debates.
Yes.
And I think that's a tough spot to put him in. Now, you keep saying yes and no to me as though you already have an answer. I'm going to give you that opportunity. All I'm saying is, like, that is a tough spot to put him in for the people that I know that supported Trump who did so not on the basis that Russia is good. They're the same people that think that Obama is a fucking asshole for doing anything with Cuba, anything Cold War related, anything with Russians.
Yeah, but that's when he was president.
So,
okay,
go ahead.
Hold on. No, before we let Travis tell us all about the history of it, I want to talk about today, the statements that were made, and I want to play a little game. I'm going to read a statement, and I'm going to give you one of three options as to who said it.
Oh, this is
fun. Who are the options?
Okay. So,
is it going to be a different option every time?
Can it be fill in the blank?
It cannot be fill in the blank because I don't have that much brain power right this second. But your options are Chuck Schumer.
Okay. Who's a Democrat?
A combination statement made by John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
And Carrot Top.
And the other one is Paul Ryan, which is the same as Carrot Top.
I was close.
So we have one Democrat, a combo of Warhawks, and Paul Ryan. Okay.
All right. So I'll read three statements to you. We'll see if we can match the statement to the people making the statement.
Okay.
First one. Quote, while today's action by the administration is overdue, it is an appropriate way to end 8 years of failed policy with Russia, and it serves as a prime example of this administration's ineffective foreign policy that has left America weaker in the eyes of the world.
That's John McCain, Lindsey Graham.
Woody Allen.
Ding, ding, ding. Woody Allen. No, it was that. No.
That's Paul Ryan.
No.
That was Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan. Very much.
Yeah, that sounded very stock. Kay. Paul Ryan.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Next.
Ultimately, the sanctions are a small price for Russia to pay for its brazen attack on American democracy. We intend to lead the effort into the new Congress to impose stronger sanctions on Russia.
John McCain.
John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
And then the last one you know already.
But tell us, what did Chuck Schumer say that was so sad?
And we just knew that because we know John McCain's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this point. I also said we, which totally gives it away.
No, I wasn't thinking that.
Okay, so this is what Chuck Schumer said. I hope the incoming Trump administration, which has been far too close to Russia throughout the campaign and transition, won't think for 1 second about weakening these new sanctions for our existing regime. Both parties ought to be united in standing up to Russian interferences in our elections and their cyber attacks, their illegal annexation of Crimea, and their other legal intervenes.
I think you guys are using a lot of wishful thinking.
Okay, Travis, go ahead.
I think your dad is just fine with the Russians. I think as far as your dad and people like that are concerned now, it was never Trump, Pence, it's Trump, Putin, and they're fine with that because it helped them win. And
well, it helped them win the election, but it also helped Russia win the Cold War.
So what?
No.
I mean,
that's not true. I'm telling you right now.
This is a zero. This, as far as these people are concerned, it's a zero sum power.
I'm telling you right
grab.
Now, my dad is living that's in a world where that is not true. No.
It is. I hope you're right, Rachel.
No. I'm telling you what these people think, and I don't know if this is broad or anecdotal, but the notion that Trump could be working with the Russians is so offensive to my dad and his ilk that it just can't be true.
But hold on a second. Hold on a second. Oh, so he doesn't believe it. Because I was going to say, this isn't new. The fact that he was in bed with the Russians, Manafort was so in bed with him, he had to get rid of Manafort. And
I mean, name only. We
knew this for months before the election, and it didn't move the needle at all. And now all of a sudden it will? Why? Because it'll be proven somehow?
Because he's the president, and he's saying the American government is in bed with Russia.
So, but when Trump gets up there on the stump, and he says, well, it's not true. It's just sour grapes by the Democrats. And I'm going to get rid of these sanctions because they're not necessary. And I'm not in the pocket. Or I will bring these my sanctions, which are going to be weak or bullshit or whatever. You think your dad's not going to buy it somehow when he's bought every other line of bullshit Trump has been serving up this whole cycle? Why wouldn't he?
Because I don't know that that's not true. I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller. I don't know that. He won't do exactly that and think like, oh, it must be true. But hold on. There's something about, there's a difference, and he told me this the other day, like there's a difference between Trump, the nominee who he did not think was going to win, and Trump speaking as the president of the United States.
Oh, so now he gets his buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
Great. Yep. Awesome.
Well, I'm not defending him. I'm just saying there is a difference with people who lived through this time that I did not, that we could maybe make believe that.
So he thought it was.
Hold on a second.
It was all the DNC just making shit up because they were afraid Hillary was going to lose and whatever. And now that the intelligence agencies who they love and the military who they love have come out and said this thing. Now, maybe because Barack Obama did it, they'll think it's a political ploy and maybe it won't work. But there is a hesitation, at least, and maybe a pushback from that generation of men, at least, that is like, you don't get to go to bed with Russia.
Hold on a second. I think you're dead wrong. I don't think conservatives stand for anything. If this election has taught me anything, it's that the only thing they stand for, or what they appear to stand for, is whatever's politically expedient. It was politically expedient for years to be tough on the Russians, even after the end of the Cold War. Not to trust them, not to trust Putin, not to trust their influence over large parts of the world. But now they've helped them win. They're fine. They don't give a crap. And I think, I'm sorry, yes, there are some holdouts, and Paul Ryan standing up to them. And of course, John McCain's always been a maverick anyway. That's why they all say he's a rhino, because he doesn't follow the party
Lindsey
line.
Lindsey Graham's a fucking hawk.
Graham's a hawk, but he's a rhino too, because he's been speaking out against Trump.
He just wants to have war. That's all Lindsey Graham wants.
Well, sure. But here's the point.
I think you're onto a big thing, Travis, which is since we no longer have duck and cover, and it's no longer the real honest-to-God Cold War that everyone remembers from their childhoods, I think that you're right. A lot of conservatives don't fucking think about nuclear war between nation states. It's just...
Well, Russia still has 20,000 nuclear warheads, and we have about as many.
Yeah, I just don't think that they think it's a possibility. Like, we lived through the 5-second countdown so many times, and it never happened.
Rachel, when you're talking about the way your dad and conservatives went apeshit over the softening of relations with Cuba, that's something Obama did. That's a completely different world.
Okay. I'm telling you that the conversations I've had are not that. Like, they lived through literally ducking and covering under their desks because of Russia, and they do not feel in any way soft or easy, no matter how much it may have made Trump their kind of guy win.
Then they should have cared before the election.
They should have.
They should have given a shit before the election.
I am not
defending
them. Because
it was so obvious
that
he was in bed with them.
I can't say how many times you've told me, Rachel, that the Russian people and Putin are just as scared of having nukes launched at them as we are at us. Nobody wants to have mutually assured destruction, thermonuclear war across the face of the earth.
Yeah, if you have a rational person in the White House and not a narcissistic egomaniac slightly out of touch with reality,
he's got a goldfield bunker. Yeah, I mean,
that's right.
This is why it gets scary.
All I'm saying is, it is scary as fuck, but I'm telling you from the ground that this Russia shit is way worse than anything else for the people who voted for Donald Trump. From my anecdotal experience, which is more than either of yours, because I talk to these people and they tell me, like, this Russia shit is the only thing that's concerning. This is the conversations I've had in the last 2 days. Let me be really angry about Israel, because everybody should support Israel all the time, and what the fuck did we do, and why does Obama hate Jews, and why does Obama hate Israel, and it's the worst thing ever.
With the John Kerry thing.
Secondarily, what's this Russia thing? Why is that okay? Russia is really bad. Like, Russia bad, Russia bad, Russia bad, Russia bad. That's still a trope.
Why didn't that matter in October, Rachel?
Especially after the Ukraine shit.
The DNC and the Democratic Party did not say shit. We decided it would be politically improper to bring up Russian hacking of our elections during the election
cycle by the president.
Yeah, Hillary. Okay, you guys. Oh my God. Hillary can say whatever she wants. She's running for office. The literal president of the United States and his administration knew and didn't say anything because they didn't want to seem partisan.
Rachel, our dads who lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis and were waiting for the missiles to come, all the ties of Trump to Russia were just as well known in July and August and September and October, and our fathers shrugged. They shrugged.
It was not like it was a secret.
And now what I'm saying is, when Trump gets in office, and he will cut those sanctions loose, and he will say it's the Democrats and Obama trying to cover for the fact that they lost and whatever, and, you know, he'll either do fake sanctions or say Putin's actually a good guy. And you, what kind of resistance is he going to get? A few Republicans in Congress? Sure. Is the tide massively going to turn from all the people who supported him his first month in office? I just don't see that. I hope you're right, Rachel. I really do hope conservatives out there do have a backbone and believe in something. But I just think they care about winning.
I completely agree with you, Travis. And I can't say enough how much I think that people right now, with the malice that is from America to Russia, from the people who grew up with it, is way less from a worried about being at ground zero perspective than it is about potentially giving away political influence that might be untoward, or maybe, obviously we don't care about conflicts of interest. I think at most we're talking about people who are saying, like, why are we getting so touchy-touchy with the Russians when
Rachel,
we just spent that much time
I hope I'm wrong. And I hope you're right. But I've had these conversations with my dad too. My dad is also an historian. And even though we come from other sides of the political spectrum, we talked about the Cold War a lot. And we talked about the Russians a lot. And if he cared enough, he would have not have abstained from voting. He would have voted against the guy who's in the pocket of the Russians.
No one thought that guy was going to win.
I think that, Rachel, that's a very good point, but I'd like
no
to bring
one
up, I'd like to bring up an idea because...
No one thought that guy was going to win, and so now that he's won, and now that we've admitted that all that's true, people's minds of that generation, in my experience, have changed.
Maybe. We'll see.
Because you bring up the idea of being a historian, mm-hmm. I just want to point something out, which if we're an audience... of millennial and Gen Xer types, there are some who are definitely going to know this, who were told this by their parents or read it in history books, and some who just frankly had no idea. But the Russians were our ally in World War II.
Right.
They won World War II for us. The history book might tell you America won World War II because of our intervention.
The Russian winner killed the Nazi war machine, yeah.
Yes.
It was too cold there.
Yeah, you know, not just that, but I mean... 200 million Russians died?
Correct.
I mean, they won that war. They won World War II, and they were our ally directly after that. And then shit got a little weird when we tried to decide who the next superpower was going to be.
No, they killed that... they killed that alliance pretty quickly by having the Iron Curtain descend across Eastern Europe.
Well, yeah, no.
And explaining their sphere of influence.
Yeah, but that was more of their beef with Europe than it was their beef with us. We tried to step in and say...
No, it was Stalin's love of conquest. Yeah.
Yes.
That's all that was.
Yes.
Point being, we were extremely close allies during the actual World War II.
I don't
you have to remember...
We were allies. I don't know how extremely close we were.
Oh, no. Russia? I mean, all of the summits between Churchill and Roosevelt...
They did not trust Stalin at all.
Which is a good call.
That's okay. From what I understand, from transcripts that I've read, was that Stalin and FDR did not trust Churchill.
Well, none of them probably trusted each other, but I can tell you that FDR, wink, wink, leaked news about the atomic bomb to try to get his reaction because he foresaw an arms race.
That is exactly true.
Know that he foresaw an arms race because that was his most famous speech he ever gave. But, you know, again, for historical purposes, it's not FDR who used the fucking bomb.
No.
But he would have.
Well, I debate that.
No.
I really debate that.
No, he would have in a heartbeat.
I really
Let's
debate
not
that.
Historically, I fantasize about what people would or would
All right. Done. Yeah, you're right. This is our history fantasy league.
Well, you have to understand. World War II at time was seen as Armageddon.
Sure.
And the Japanese were seen as completely. If not potentially suicidal, and the only way to defeat them was with the bomb. That is how it was seen. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying it's just. I'm not saying that history proves it right or wrong. I'm saying that's how it was seen.
That was the temperature at the time, for sure. I think Harry Truman should have known better.
Always,
but
point out too the isolationism that occurred before World War II.
There's Republicans.
Republicans, their isolationism, and this idea that Americans are the most important and we should not protect other people. It's not our fucking job and it's not our responsibility. And we shouldn't spend our resources on people who are being mass slaughtered and we don't really know what's going on. And also they're immigrants and they're not like us. So who cares?
Oh yeah. Even after Pearl Harbor, it wasn't a sure thing that we were going to be able to declare war on Germany. Germany declared war on us, which nobody's still quite sure about.
Nobody's still quite sure about a lot of that, but my point is not that. My point is that this Donald Trump regime, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good word for it.
Harkens back to a lot of our worst ideas all combined into one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is this sense of isolationism, which is what led to our reticence to get involved in World War II, which is what directly led to the continuation of the Holocaust, which... they love to fetishize and talk about how that's why we should support Israel all the time in every way because they got, you know, holocausted. And yet we stood by for years and years and allowed that to happen because of this sense of isolationism that we're now saying we should do. So it's this very
Trump has mixed messages on that notion.
No, not just Trump. This is a Republican notion. It's this notion of isolationism. If what one brand, right? We are the world police in the sort of, you know, neocons.
America, but, fuck yeah.
Right. But there's this sense of like, we have to support Israel because the Holocaust was terrible, but also we have to be nationalist and isolationist and not worry about anyone else because we are the most important and we have to protect ourselves. And that is directly what led to the continuation of the Holocaust. Well, so I want Israel's response. I want Bibi to come out.
Hold on a second. Like, let me correct you right there, because Bibi does not speak for all of Israel. In fact,
I agree.
He's as contentious as George W. Bush, even more so in his country.
Yeah, well, I don't like that guy.
And he's now under criminal investigation.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that guy at all. But I think he's the leader of their country. They elected him. So I need Bibi Netanyahu to come out and be like, I like Republicans because they did not intervene during World War II because of isolationism, but now they don't want a two-nation state, so they're my friends.
Jesus Christ, just think of the connotations of that, how we just talked about. Well, he represents their country, he's their leader.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you have democracy. I look at Bibi Netanyahu and I say, okay, explain yourself, explain your country. And people go, no, it's not me. And I go, yeah, well, you elected him. That's Trump.
I ran into that when I was on tour and Bush was president.
Yeah.
And he's in the UK. You're a Canadian?
No, I had to explain, like, it was about 50-50 and I was on that other 50 side, trust me. And
I used to talk to people at bars and clubs and stuff and be like,
people from other countries?
Yeah. We had a pretty
multicultural,
really international community.
Because when you go overseas, they kind of assumed everybody loved Bush.
We lived in a really international community, and so people came over here and they were like, "What the fuck?" By the way, and they'd be like, "No,
not us."
I remember one particular night at a bar, there was two French guys.
Our French is a little rusty. French, yeah,
It's not too bad. We're about 75%.
Back then, I was
fluent,
but.
We picked up on a lot of what they were trying to ask us about, but really mostly just came down to, what the fuck?
What's with Bush? What's with the Bush guy?
Well, you thought that was bad.
You seem nice.
What the fuck, what's with Bush?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to have to, like, learn a Canadian accent and start saying, like, I don't know.
I'm not from here.
A boot? I don't know what that's from here, eh? Hey, how about some Tim...
Tim Hortons, eh?
You have Tim Hortons here, eh?
That's not bad, Rich.
Oh, I could be Canadian.
Get some Timbits.
And I speak a little French, so I could be like, qu'est-ce que c'est le Tim Hortons, eh?
No, I don't think you'd say qu'est-ce que c'est le Tim Hortons. You should know qu'est-ce que c'est what the Tim Hortons are, but où est le Tim Hortons?
Où est le Tim Hortons, eh?
One thing that I think that, if I can drag it back to the World War II conversation a little bit, because you were talking about the isolationism and the xenophobism, and the hyper-nationalism, I think, that we were feeling at the time.
And Charles Lindbergh saying the Nazis were okay.
Yeah. So that's what I was just about to get to, which is the selling of munitions to both sides, which I think that
we still do that.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, if we thought that that was a holdover from World War II, that's about to get much, much worse.
Reagan was really good at that.
Oh, mate, Reagan was incredibly good at
it. And hey, guys, this is not liberal propaganda. This is actual fact, so...
No, straight up, we sold all the military in Russia, most of their tanks and weapons and rockets, and then we sold the Germans all the same things. Because before we got involved in the war, we were like, hey, anytime two evil motherfuckers want to shoot at each other, I'm a happy guy.
And then we sold all the Afghanis the same things to fight the Russians.
Yeah, and that's where...
And then the Afghanis fought us with them. Like,
that's where Al-Qaida comes from, which is where ISIS comes from.
So,
and we gave Saddam Hussein the weapons of mass destruction that we used as a cover to start the Iraq War.
Well...
They didn't have any of those, but we... Yes.
Well, the ones that we knew they had at one time.
Yeah. Yes.
This is just the snake eating its head. It's just this perpetual cycle of like,
well, and who we're benefits? Always picking who benefits? The good guy. I mean, just think about it. Who benefits?
The lobbyists and the munition company guys who are friends with the congressman and the president.
Military.
That's exactly right.
No. Military industrial complex.
At what point in time would good-heartedness or thoughtfulness overcome greed in this scenario?
Hey, what point does Marge from Ohio or Iowa benefit from this?
Well, she
voted for Trump.
Well, she doesn't, but she also is not going to grasp the complexity of what we're talking about here.
Also, her son probably went to Afghanistan and died, so how did she benefit again?
She blames Obama.
Yeah, that was Obama's fault.
Except Bush sent him into war.
Well, okay, if Marge is worried about if Marge is worried about the Russians, she's going to turn on the TV, and Trump's going to say, the Russians are fine, this is the Democrats and sour grapes, I'm cutting all the sanctions, and she's going to go, okay, make America great. I mean, why am I wrong, Rachel? Please, I want to be wrong about this.
Okay,
I just don't see how I am.
Can I run a hypothetical? Let's say 2 years from now, what happened in Ukraine happened then instead. What would have been different? Just thought experiment.
Wait, hold on. What are you saying?
If Russia had annexed Ukraine under Trump instead of Obama,
what would have gone differently?
Nothing.
Not that much, actually.
I don't think anything, except for there wouldn't have been any conversation about the idea.
Or sanctions. We had some sanctions. Well, there wouldn't be any sanctions.
They were not ineffective.
They didn't make Russia give Ukraine back, so.
No, that's true.
So they're not that effective then, right?
Yeah, I guess you got a point there.
Yeah.
If that was the idea of the sanctions, and it wasn't just to punish them economically,
it certainly didn't
hurt Putin's standing.
No, nope.
No, not at all.
At all, and it didn't help our standing, and it didn't help the Ukraine or anybody really. So they were not effective, I would say.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair enough.
I mean, what else could possibly? There wouldn't have been any conversation of boots on the ground.
No, no, no. They would have been like. Trump would
there
maybe
was
have
conversation
come out
of boots on the ground.
Said, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's the only thing I can think of that
Trump
would be different.
Trump would maybe have come out and said.
I think Lindsey Graham and John McCain wanted to send troops.
Well, of course they do. That's their Jimmy Jam. That's their. Now that's what I call Lindsey Graham and John McCain part 8 or whatever. That's what they want.
I think that maybe Trump would have said something on Twitter. Like,
and with horrible misspelling.
If you look at history, Russia's fine. That's part of them.
He'd
and
be
they
like,
never explained. And when he went on a like CNN interview later, because he was the president, he'd have been like, just look at your own history books. I don't know anything. I'm just the president. It's not like I'm a historian. It seems like that's part of Russia. They've been fighting about it for a long time. Maybe they just took it. Like, he'd say something that ludicrous.
I think it'd be even worse if he were just left of his own devices, like, just to
no, he's
Twitter
not left
or,
of his no, own devices. He's no, the president.
I'm saying if he were left of his own devices, I think he'd say something along the lines of, when I was growing up, it was the USSR. Make the USSR great again.
Yeah. He doesn't get to say that when he's the president for 2 years, though.
Maybe if he
good
learns.
Good point. Maybe
some
he would have
things.
Said that, but I don't think.
No, I think he would have said exactly what Rachel said.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like him.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't love the USSR. That's bad. He grew up when that's bad. He doesn't want the USSR again. He would have just been like, legitimately, like, that's Russia, so we should, like, not worry about it. And also, isolationism,
well, yeah,
et
I mean, what he said about it already has been, quote-unquote, we should just forget about it already.
Well, that was about the leaks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We should move on.
About the Russian leaks. We should just
forget
about it.
Well, I thought he denied they ever happened, still.
No, he... Okay, so... it's hard to pin him down on a particular sentence fragment, but
I know.
he didn't say specifically that yes, it was good or yes, it was bad or yes, it even happened. The only thing he really had to say about it was, why don't we just
move on with our lives
and forget about it already?
Sure.
Move on with our lives.
Move on with our lives.
The party line from, I think, even Sean Spicer today was, there's still no proof that any of this happened.
I believe
but
CIA
don't you think
and
that, okay, so
we're in a post-fact America. Who
giving,
cares?
Get, okay, beyond your complete cynicism about
post-fact
America.
I am beyond what you even know, Rachel.
Travis, you know that I'm with you, and I'm completely a nihilist right now, and I don't believe, like, anything.
Uh-huh.
But I'm doing a political podcast with a left-wing perspective. I'm trying to be hopeful. So... Yeah, it's exhausting. I love you guys. But imagining that Donald Trump were the president, like, I just don't think that you can say to regular Americans, like, this was always Russia's thing, and
but he's been
fine.
But he said shit like that through
the
whole campaign,
but he was
Rachel.
Just a fucking candidate. He was just a fucking piece of
there's
shit.
There's not going to be any difference.
That they were like, ha ha, Hillary Clinton can't win. And there is a real. I think that that's the thing that you guys are missing is like.
Now they care about.
No, now they have an anxiety
real?
About real things. before it was a reality show. Now it's anxiety about issues.
I think it's still a reality show.
I don't think so. I think I have a lot of evidence of, like, there's reality about actual issues that impact their lives that they're like, he can't really do that, right? Or that can't happen, right? Or that's not a thing, right? And it's like,
yeah, but they'll just blame it on Obama.
They aren't at the moment.
They're saying.
I think some things will be too egregious to blame on Obama.
No, when they
what
repeal.
What I'm saying is, people are upset about Trump that voted for him.
Are they?
That is happening.
Are they
currently? Yes,
a lot of them. Percentage of them.
I don't know how many, but there are some, and it is not just anecdotal.
When they
they are stupid, and I feel bad for them. Sort of. It's like we talked about last week. I want to end my toxic relationship with these people who voted this way because they didn't understand. But then I feel bad for them because they voted against their own interest and now they're going to lose their health care. And it's like, I don't know how to feel. But there's more and more of that coming out that's like people are having Brexit anxiety around their vote. Like they're having like, what is Brexit? What is Donald Trump? He can't really do this, right? He can't really do that, right?
I don't know if there's as much of that as you think.
It's too fucking late, but it's happening.
I don't think there's as much of that as you think. I really don't.
Well, I think you think there's none of it. And I'm telling you, I'm
sure there's a little bit. But enough to where it's going to make a difference.
A certain amount of it. As people are looking more into it after Now It's Real, it has been kind of a...
It's real.
I mean, as I just said, like a lot of the things that I... read on blog posts, I think that a lot of it are stupid headlines and a lot of it's not real. But I did see Lawrence O'Donnell and Bernie Sanders do a town hall where they sat down and talked to Trump voters and asked them specifically, why did you vote for Trump? And they explained why. Yep. And Bernie Sanders, like Lawrence O'Donnell just like fielded questions.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders then explained why that was a bad idea to vote for Trump for that particular reason. The number of people who I saw just have like this flicker of go like, oh, fuck.
New York Magazine did an entire article about this.
You mean I voted the wrong way?
This is
like the
Brexit.
Number of people who did that. I mean, I'm talking like 85% of the people in that town hall all just had this like
deer in the headlights
look on their face. I can't believe I contributed to the opposite of what I wanted.
You know what? They're fucking adults, and the media didn't do a good job. But there was always the ability there to drill down to the issues and find out what was actually at stake.
Yep.
And if we live in a society full of overgrown children who can vote, the ones who decide to show up and vote, then we are the idiocracy and we deserve what we get.
Yep.
I don't know how to explain it more plainly than that.
No, I mean, we're all nihilists now.
We can't save this country from itself if it wants to have a party and careen into the abyss to prove some point. I mean, I've dealt with this in my personal life. I've dealt with this nationwide and I'm off the ride, guys. If this is where you want to head because you were too negligent or too impulsive to make a responsible decision, then what are we supposed to do?
After your own interests. Like I said last week, I'm tired of the toxic relationship I have with conservatives where I keep trying to save them from themselves and they keep voting against me. I keep trying to save their health insurance and their Medicaid and their Social Security and their shit and they keep voting against that. I'm tired of that toxic, emotionally abusive relationship. I just want to say, like, fuck you, don't have insurance. And let's just let you all die in the streets, except that it affects
people we care about.
People I care about. And also, I'm not a fucking monster. So...
So you can't really do that.
Yeah, I still want you to... You didn't get it. And yeah, your fucking husband's gonna die of liver cancer now. That is totally half your fault. But I wish you didn't vote that way. And I'll try to fight to make sure he doesn't fucking die of that. But I still am just exhausted. Because the people I care about...
They're anxiety
ridden. Are some of those people. But the other people I care about are people who knew what was coming and whose actual, like, daily rights were being affected.
Mm-hmm.
And those people also voted against them. And me, frankly. Like, I'm a lady and I'm a queer and I'm poly.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, those people also voted against my existence. My fundamental existence as a human being got voted down. No, you don't ever get to win. No, you don't ever get to be president. No, you don't have the same rights. yes, we can grab you by whatever body part we feel like. Your rights don't matter. You are fundamentally less human than everyone else. Those people also voted that way, which also makes me feel like now I really don't want to be in this toxic relationship anymore. Like, now I'm actually breaking up with you.
So without using names, you can go
die on the street without any healthcare, and I'm sorry that you voted that way. Bye. Yeah.
So without using names or associations, can you kind of relay the conversation you had the other day with a Trump voter who is relatively religious and relatively anti-gay, and tell me what you said you guys talked about without saying?
Well, we're out of time, so okay. I think we're going to have to save that. But yeah. On this cheery note, the last 10 minutes, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy friggin' New Year.
Please do all the rituals
like that we talked about in our last episode.
Please and do that.
First and
as
foremost,
a community.
Smash a 2016 disco ball pinata.
And it's most important that you pull up the panties. According to the Venezuelan chick I work with, pull
yellow,
up the panties.
Yellow
or
red.
Yellow is for money. Red is for chaka chaka. Pull up those panties right at midnight. It'll save the new year. Love you guys. Thank you for listening. Have a happy new year.
Hang in there, please.
We're
not going to shut up, so stick with us and hear us out. Anyway, I have been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
At Irreverent Duo on Twitter, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com for hate mail. Goodbye. Happy New Year. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Adios.
Chin up. Everybody loves a happy face. Wear it, share it. It'll brighten up the darkest place. Twinkle, sparkle, let a little sunshine in. You'll be on the right side looking at the bright side. Up with your chinny chin chin.
Will the party who addressed me last night kindly come out of hiding?
If you do have a friend, you're probably disturbing his rest.
Oh.
Chin up, chin up. Put a little laughter in your eyes. Brave it, save it. Even though you're feeling otherwise, rise up, wise up. Make a little smile begin. You'll be happy-hearted once you get it started. Up with your chinny chin chin.
Salutations.
Salut-what?
Salutations.
What are they? And where are you?
Salutations are greetings. It's my fancy way of saying hello. Look up here in the doorway.
Chin up, chin up. Everybody loves up.